Welcome to the Creativity Cafe for the creatively adventurous and the relentlessly curious.
We have inspiring conversations with creative women from all over the world.
I'm Paige Baldwinando, and I'm a creativity coach who helps people maximize their creative potential, and I'm also a writer.
And I'm Jordana Matsuda. I'm an illustrator on my creative journey, with Paige helping me along the way.
We're both long-term residents of Japan, a country bursting with creative energy that inspires us every day.
So go grab a cup of tea and join us in discovering new creative landscapes here on the Creativity Cafe. Hello, Paige.
Hi, Jordana. So I was thinking today, this morning actually, about how you had told me that when you were younger, you were quite into drama, like drama club in your school. Will you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So just to start off, like in England, when I was growing up, we didn't really have clubs at school. So it was like just an option you took.
Oh, I see.
As one of your subjects. It wasn't like a club or anything. But you know, things might have changed by now. But I think that's quite a difference maybe between America and the UK.
Yeah. In mind,
yes,
are subtle differences.
Because I think there is, like, you know, there's an image of, you know, drama club,
yes,
or what have you. But yes, like from primary school all the way to the end of secondary school, I was always wanted to be in like the school play, or I opted to do drama as one of my GCSEs, and like it's really strange because if you ask anyone. Like, I'm a shy person. Like, oh, Jordana's really shy. Like, she doesn't really talk unless, you know, someone asks her a question. Like, she's not the kind of person who volunteers in conversation or anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Growing up. But somehow I always wanted to be in the school play. Like, one year at the Christmas concert, I was, like, the narrator on stage for the whole performance. I look back now and I'm like, how did I do what? Why? What was that motivation? I'd have no idea, to be honest, when I was at primary school, why that was. Secondary school is when I really, like, really got into it and really enjoyed it. And like, because it was more of a, you know, production then. Hey, we had a specific drama teacher, and it was really. I found that my drama class, compared to all my other classes, there was more of a sense of like community, like more of a sense of we got each other, or because it was such a, in my school, it was such a random mix of people in drama class.
Right.
Like from like the girl who was the head girl and like a few other prefects, but then also like the like funny, like loud boys or. It was just, it was so random. It really was.
So it's kind of like a cross section of all different kinds of people that you get to hang out with.
Yeah, it really was. And like, I don't think a lot of us would have ever hung out.
Right. Yeah.
Unless we were in that class together.
So that's pretty cool. And then you're doing this thing together, you know, like it's not like you're just, I don't know, chilling. Like you've got an objective to create this thing that that requires really a lot of cooperation to make happen.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like you have to have that trust, and trust in like not only that you've, you know, studied and know what you're doing and expectations, but like the creative element that you bring to it as well. You know, you're not just getting on stage and reading your lines. Like everyone's coming to it with the same level of energy or commitment or passion.
Yeah. Because it really is no small undertaking to put a production up on the stage. Like it there is so much work involved.
But it didn't feel like it though when we were doing it. Do you know what I mean? It was just so much fun.
Yeah. It's both at the same time. I guess like a lot of creative things, right? It's like this is fun, so it doesn't feel like work, but actually it really is. It's a lot of effort anyway, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
And like my first ever boyfriend was from drama class, and we never would have started dating had we not even done that class together, that's for sure. How about you, Paige? Were you ever like involved much with drama at school?
I loved it.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I loved it, especially when I was young. So I went to a very small primary school where we had annual Christmas pageants, you know, so there was always not everyone was in the Christmas pageant, but you would be involved in some way, like either in the choir or in the pageant, like up on the stage. So I was on the stage several times in my time there, but mainly what I liked more than that was whatever we were putting on in terms of like a play, you know. So there were a few times where I was cast in the play, you know, in a minor role. And then there was one time, actually, and this is my main memory of being in drama, where I was the understudy for the main character. And I thought, oh, that's fine. Like, it's never going to happen. Like, I don't need to study my lines. It's going to be fine. Never going to happen that I'm going to have to like actually get on the stage. And then guess what? She got laryngitis. I crammed the night before, like all
my God.
And I think I was 11 or 12 when this happened. And I was terrified, absolutely terrified. It was also the time in my life when, I know you know about this, but I'm not sure I've mentioned it on the podcast before. I was severely bullied in my elementary school days, like very, very severely, to the point where most people, like no people in my grade would speak to me. Like they would not acknowledge my existence or speak to me at all unless there was violence involved, verbal or physical. So for me to suddenly be the star of the play, like overnight for no reason, was very strange. You know,
yeah. How did you like cope with that? Like, because it happened in such a short time, hey?
It was terrifying.
Yeah.
So I developed through the course of the bullying like this tendency to just be very quiet and very small and try to stay invisible, right? Mm. And being the main character in the play is really the opposite of that.
Exactly. So, yeah.
So in some ways, I think it may have been a healing experience for me, you know, to find that my voice was needed. And that, like, I have to even wonder if the teachers knew that that was going on. And that's why they gave me the understudy.
Oh, interesting.
Thinking that I wouldn't need to use it. Right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyway, I did do it and I received, this is kind of amazing. I remember it so clearly how it felt in my body, standing on the stage, looking out at the audience, receiving a standing ovation.
Oh, wow.
The audience knew that I had been the understudy, right?
Yeah. And
planned to be the main character. So I don't even remember the name of the play. I do remember some of my lines, you know.
You do.
I really crammed those lines, Jill.
Inscribed in your memory.
But what I remember above all is the feeling of knowing that I could do it, you know.
Yep. Yeah.
In my body, a thing was asked of me, you know, that I needed to do to for other people, you know, for the people who were putting on the play. And I don't know that I could have come through that way if not for not wanting to let other people down.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that part of it for you? Like that feeling of camaraderie and like we're in this together, that kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. Like that was definitely like my strongest memories are definitely from secondary school to do with drama. And I think, yeah, when everybody's studying so hard for it and so passionate about it.
Yeah.
You don't want to let other people down. And like, I would never had a leading role or anything, but like, I was like opening the show for our like GCSE show.
Mm.
And that was like a lot of pressure. For me back then. But yeah, like you said, I think the combination for me of that kind of teamwork, working together in like a shared kind of passion and working through the nerves and doing it anyway, gives you a certain confidence afterwards. Did you feel that? Like, did you feel your confidence kind of shifted in a different way?
Yeah, I felt that it shifted the way I thought about myself.
Yeah.
And what I was capable of, you know. And that, I think, is a big part of the work of our guest today, Tenny Sangma, who is an amazing human who works with speech and drama. And I think so much of what Tenny is doing is really helping people to find their confidence through performance and through play, you know?
Yeah. And I think, like, the way that she breaks it down of how she works with people, it feels so doable. Hey, it doesn't feel like something scary to try and work through. She makes it sound like so much fun.
Yeah, and she's a fun person.
She is, isn't she? Yeah, yeah. You can see why children and adults are like, you know, love to be around her, because her energy is very positive and uplifting.
Yes, really. Yeah. And, you know, it's something that I think, especially these days, like, we don't give that much thought to the ways that playing in this way can help us to build that confidence that we might use in every other part of our lives, actually.
Yes.
Speaking, you know, speaking in front of people, or even just having everyday interactions with people, like building the confidence to be able to use your voice in interactions with others is an incredibly powerful skill and tool to have in your tool belt.
Yeah. Because it is interesting how, you know, different types of public speaking, you know, provokes a different reaction within me anyway. Like, I can get up and stand in front of 40 children and teach a whole lesson. But, you know, if I had to stand up in front of, you know, a few of my friends to talk about my artwork, it's completely different, different feeling.
Yeah, right. There's a different level of vulnerability.
Yes.
Those things, right? Yeah. When you're in front of 40 children, you're the teacher, you know, that, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
But in that other situation, there's more like showing of yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love how Tenny talks about this building of confidence, as well as so many other things she brings into the conversation that are really fascinating, and I think everyone will enjoy listening to. So let us go ahead and take a listen to our conversation with Tenny. Since moving to Japan from India in 2007, Tenny Sangma has made Tokyo her home. Using her vast array of skills in the field of speech and drama, Tenny helps young people develop confidence and build skills in communication and in expressing their creativity. Making self-expression accessible to everyone, no matter their background or skill level, is central to Tenny's mission. Thanks for joining us, Tenny.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. It's lovely to have you here today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I've been listening to your podcast and I've been wanting to talk to you guys for a long time. So it's great. So thank you. Thank you for calling me to your show.
Oh, we're happy to have you here.
Very happy.
Yeah. So we ask all our guests the same question to start off with, as it's always very interesting. What's your first memory of doing something creative?
Well, first memory. So ever since I was in school, so I grew up in a small town in the northeast of India, and, you know, very quite remote. So when I was I remember summer holidays at home, and our summer holidays in India are long. They're like 2 months, 2.5 months, and we have nothing to do. There's no summer school, there's nothing. We literally just sort of like run around, and we have big gardens, and, you know, we're left to fend for ourselves and do whatever we can. And so it was always boring, and, you know, there was no cable TV, no YouTube videos, nothing, no phones. So it was always trying to find something to do, and I was always tinkering with things and DIYing and trying to keep myself busy. And so I remember those summer holidays and trying to get a piece of paper and see what I could do with it, or cut up some old clothes, trying to make some new things out of it. So I was always up to something. So my mom would say that after the summer, there was always half-finished project or finished projects lying around, and mom's like, oh my god, Penny's been up to no good again. So, that's what I remember. And I was like painting t-shirts out of nothing, trying. And now when I think about it, I'm like, where did those ideas come from? I have no idea. But I was just always up to experimenting and exploring. So I think those are my first memories.
Oh, I love that. It's amazing how boredom can be such a catalyst.
Absolutely. Yes.
What can I do with myself?
Yeah. And that's why I think, like, these days, you know, summer holidays, we are always trying to keep our kids in one class or the other. And I always say that, like, you know, with my children, I've always said, okay, they can attend summer school for a month, but after that, let them get bored. And they do get bored, and they're always complaining, and then I'm pulling my hair out by the end of the second week, but I'm like, go out there and do something. So yeah.
And do they do that?
they do. Of course they say, mom, I don't know what to do, mom, what should I do? And I'm like, I don't know, think of something. And they do come up with things. And I think now I'm like, go watch a YouTube video on how to make something, or, you know. Mm-hmm. So they have so many resources right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So they do that. But I, of course, I also jump in sometimes to help them. But yeah.
I think it's important to, like, for kids to learn to get through that awkwardness of boredom. Like that first, like, oh, I don't know what to do. Oh, like that feeling is so important to get used to, I think.
Yeah.
You know, other than relying on something else to entertain you. And my son struggles with that too, so
I mean like my mom always says that, you know, she had four children, and we grew up with cousins and, you know, lots of friends living around us. And she said like, when I had my first child and I was trying to make her eat her dinner, and she was a picky eater, so I was like kind of dancing and doing all tricks to make her eat. And my mom said, like, she was watching me one day and she goes, oh my god, you guys are like the, you know, like the entertaining dancing monkeys, like always trying to like entertain your kids and dance and make them do things. She's like, I just served you food at the table, you eat or you don't eat, like, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that's where these days, like, a lot of us are kind of caught in that situation of always having to entertain our children and making sure they're entertained, whereas we grew up with having to kind of figure it out ourselves. And I think that's also an important skill for them to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
how to keep yourself busy.
It's also, I think, about our own discomfort with boredom, whether or not we can stand our kids being bored. You know, like, yeah, I think for many parents, like, the irritation of having them be bored is enough to kind of put an iPad in front of their face or whatever, right? But like, if we can withstand our own uncomfortable feelings, their boredom, then we can push through, we can, like, you know, persevere and help them persevere too, to learn the really valuable skills of boredom, like, that come out of boredom, right? Yeah.
But boredom is good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Boredom is good. And with summer coming up, oh my gosh. Already.
Penny, I'm curious about your path towards, like, where you are today creatively. Everything you've created with your work is so interesting. And I'd love to hear you tell us a bit about how you got here.
But I've come a long, long way, I think, from what I thought I would be doing to where I am now. And let's just start at the beginning. And so I have always been in teaching, although surprisingly, it was one of the professions that it came to me naturally. I always loved teaching since I was a little kid. I was working with younger siblings or little kids, and, you know, I enjoyed it. And my mom, my grandma, they are all in the teaching profession. And my grandmother actually was, she was the headmistress of a school that was opened by the mother's club of our little town. And so she ran this school, and most of the children in that school were children from, you know, not so well off families who couldn't afford the slightly more expensive private schools and stuff. So she ran this school, and at during the summer holidays and when they needed a sub teacher or somebody to help out and stuff, she would call one of her granddaughters, and I was always the one saying, yeah, I'll come. So I'd go into the classroom and I'd work with them, and I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And but I never saw myself as a teacher, because one of the things that I also didn't have at the time when I was young was that I was not patient. I was kind of had kind of a quick temper, and so I never thought I would be teaching. And also, it was a very not a very well paid job. So I was always like, no, I'm not going to be a teacher. I'm going to do something more. But cut to the chase. And then, you know, I went to university. I studied English literature. And then I was figuring out what to do. And then during that time, I started getting in, being involved in a lot of children homes and helping them just because I thought maybe I wanted to work with children with special needs. Because I had a cousin who had who was autistic, and I was very close to my cousin, so I wanted to work. I thought that was the path I wanted to take. So I did a lot of volunteer work, and then I enjoyed interacting with children. But then something about teaching in a school, like you said, the more traditional way in India where I was raised, the classrooms are very traditional. The kind of education is very traditional textbook. And I, as a child, I went through it because I had to. I didn't have a choice. But I never enjoyed it as much. And I always felt that, you know, I'm more creative, but here they're asking me to study science and math. And, like, what's the need for that? And I was never into all of that. So I was like, okay, if I want to be a teacher, I don't want to be a classroom teacher. I want to be something else. So that's why I thought special education. But then I don't know, after college I started working as a business English teacher, and again I wasn't enjoying that, and I was thinking, what is it that I want to do? And I had never actually heard about speech and drama until one day a friend introduced me, and it was very new in India at the time, and they said that there was a center where they use storybooks and poems. And he's like, I don't know what it is, but my cousin's working there. You want to go check it out? They're looking for assistant teachers. I was like, okay, fine, cool. I'll go check it out. I've got, you know, no plans. So I went in to check it out, and turns out I fell in love. Aww. The first day I walked into that classroom, I came back and I was like, this is what I want to do. My gosh. Wow. And it was like something kind of just exploded in my head. And I'm like, oh my God, this is the kind of teaching I want to do. And so I started learning more about it. And then I started working for them. And then I was like, okay, I need to learn more about this. So I started doing online courses, and speech and drama became my calling. And then I became a mom. After working with them for years, and then I moved to another city, and then I became a mom, and then we moved to Tokyo, and then I was like, okay, what is it that I want to do? So I started looking for a speech and drama center in Tokyo that I would love to work at, and then I realized that there wasn't one at the time. And my daughter at that time was 2.5 years old, so I started researching, and it wasn't there. So I wrote to this one company that had centers all over the world, and I said, do you have a center? Am I missing something? Do you have a center in Japan? And they said they didn't. And then they asked me if I wanted to start my own, you know, franchise their brand. And I had just arrived in Tokyo at the time, and I said, no, I don't know anything about running a business. So I said no, and instead I joined a preschool. And I worked there for many years. And then my daughter, my oldest one, who's graduating this summer. She was a very shy, introverted child. She wasn't shy, but she was very reserved. I like, you know, people misunderstand what shy is. And so she wasn't shy at all, but she was very reserved. And she was, you know, she was not the outgoing personality or character. So I knew speech and drama could help her. And so I was looking, and then it wasn't there. And then she went into school, and by the time I had been working for the preschool for many years, and I think I had kind of done the things that I wanted to do at the preschool, and I used speech and drama in my classroom even as a preschool teacher. So that was something. So I contacted the company again after many years, and I had, by that time, I think I'd been talking about it for so long that my husband was just like, why don't you just start it? And I'm like, I don't know anything about running a business. I've never done it. And I always thought of myself as like, you know, I'm not a business person. I'm just a teacher. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, well, just start something. And at the, you know, those days I thought, okay, if I could just run a class where my daughter could attend as well and just have a little group of 5-6 kids, that's enough for me. And you know, gives me some pocket money, and you know, so my own thing. It's very flexible, and all of those. And so I started that in 2012, and then I started. It just started to grow, and it's growing now. And then pre-COVID, it was, I started approaching schools, asking them if they wanted to offer it as an after-school program. And initially, you know, I didn't have a school under my belt, and so nobody knew who I was, and nobody knew what the program was about. And so a lot of schools kind of rejected me and said that, no, we don't have space, or we don't have any blah, 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 and you know, excuses. And then I was like, yeah, okay, fine. But one school did give me a chance, one international school, and said, sure, you can run it. And then so I ran it for them, and by that time, I had one school, and then I started approaching other schools. I hustled a lot. I walked, I had a little bag, and I walked everywhere. I was giving free trials. I was doing all of that. And then pre-COVID, we were in 11 international schools in Tokyo. And and now it's continuing to grow. Of course, COVID put a stop to some, but we're all back this year, and it continues to grow, and it's still growing. And my daughter, who was one of my first students, is graduating this year. And a lot of children, I've worked with so many children, and I don't realize how old I'm getting until I see that they're all in university.
Yeah, it's always a strange feeling, isn't it?
So the first of my students who went through that program are all like graduating university.
Even. Yes. Yeah, it's amazing. You have impacted their lives.
Oh, I mean, it's so heartwarming when I get messages to say that, you know, they still remember, some of them still remember me, and they're like, and I was telling them, like, please come back to Japan. I'm still around, and, you know, get a summer job with me, and, you know, stuff like that. So they've moved on, but it's so nice. They all still connect. Some of them still connect with me via Instagram and things like that. And I'm like, oh, so cute. Mm. Yeah.
It's so lovely.
So that's my journey, not in short, but the long story.
Mm, yeah, it's interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, so you've taught a lot of children over the years. So in your experience, like, what do you feel the role of drama related work has been in building confidence in children?
So, you know, it's interesting that when I first started, and I always drama classes, people always thought that drama is for the outgoing child who wants to perform. So it's an acting school, or it's a performance school. But speech and drama is slightly different from training children to be actors and actresses, right? So the biggest thing that I had was educating people, and educating parents, and other educators as well, or telling people about what the program does and what it's about. So everybody still now, till this day, the other day I met a parent who said, like, so are you an actor? I said, no, I'm not an actor. I've never been an actor. And it's like, oh, but you have an acting school. I said, no, that's the thing. I don't have an acting school. I have a speech and drama school or a speech and drama program. And the role is of speech and drama is that we use dramatization and drama techniques to help children find a voice. So it is for the, yes, the outgoing child who wants to perform pieces of poetry or who want to go up on stage and do a show. Yes, it is. It helps them develop those skills as well. But it is also for the introverted, reserved child who is just learning to speak up. Or who's just learning to stand up and face and make eye contact with people. And I think what it does is that because language is, you know, there's spontaneous language and then there's scripted language. And with drama, you have both and you use both. It allows you to both to sort of train yourself to use both aspects of language. So with improvisation, with ad-libbing, you're using spontaneous language. Whereas with script, when you're learning a script and you're learning lines, you're using scripted language. So it allows the child to sort of use both aspects and train themselves and develop the confidence. So confidence for me is not just about, you know, being up there on stage and performing, but it's a life skill that you need every day. So it's about learning to say yes, no, or maybe, or what is this, or I don't want to. So I think like a lot of people misunderstand what drama is and they think that, you know, I'm very shy, I can't do it. But I think it is beneficial for the shy child to be there in a safe, supportive learning environment so that they're not afraid to say yes or no. And I've noticed this with a lot of children who attend Japanese schools, actually. A lot of Japanese children come to my classes now, and then the first time they come in, they're amazed that they can do whatever they want in a way, you know, and they're like, oh, I thought this was a classroom, but the teacher's being silly and everybody is it's acceptable. So And I think that creates a safe environment for them. So one of the examples that I always like to use is that, for example, I have an elephant puppet or something. And I say, oh, the elephant is really hungry. And would you like to feed him some food to the little ones, the 3-year-olds and the 4-year-olds? So they think it's an elephant. You have to feed the food that it is supposed to eat. But I'm like, yes, that's, you know, but in drama, you can use your imagination. It can eat anything. It can eat cars. It can eat sausages. It can eat vegetables and, you know, ice cream and things. And that kind of opens up their minds. Like, what? You can? I'm like, yeah, this is drama class. And then we take that into drama. So everybody's idea has a place in a drama class and we can build on that. And that gives them the confidence.
Yeah. And am I remembering correctly, Tenny, that you also work with adults from time to time?
I do. I train also. I train teachers. Yeah. So I go to schools and they call me for professional development days. And I've had workshops where, you know, as a teacher myself and, you know, all of us are teachers at home. And as we grow into adulthood, I think we need to activate our... the silly side of ourselves a lot more sometimes. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and so I do work with adults and I do work with teachers as well. Yeah.
And would you say all of this applies... Oh, sorry.
Sorry, no, go ahead.
Would you say all of this applies to adults as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think somebody asked me, like, how do you build confidence in an adult? And I think... As children, actually, we are more free. As adults, we become more and more guarded.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's like I was having this conversation the other day, like, you know, you have so many the weight of other people's expectations or even your own, what you think. And it becomes more and more hard as adults to sort of, like I said, to let your guard down. And so when you go into a drama class and you do all these sort of silly things, what they would say, or this kind of activate your imagination, it's really hard for adults, because we're so tuned into reality that, you know, like the hardest thing is like, okay, just ad lib about something, improvise about something. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to improvise.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, really hard. And because if I say like, what do you see up in the sky? And it's like dark clouds, you know, or I don't see anything. So to kind of envision something out of nothing is really hard. And it trains our brain to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it then makes you start thinking and looking at things differently, a different perspective. And I think that's really important as adults too.
And there's that playfulness that we sometimes lose connection with, that when we do come back into connection with it, is so invigorating and energizing.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Playfulness. We need that.
Yeah. So that takes me to a question about like story, right? Because I think for so many of us, like, we're so enthralled by stories, right? Mm-hmm. We spend so much of our life, you know, engaging with story, whether that's like in a conversation with a friend or watching Netflix or listening to an audiobook or whatever it is, right?
Yes.
Part of your work includes highlighting the power of story to create connection and confidence. And I'd love to have you tell us more about that aspect of your
work. Yeah, I mean, I am a picture book collector. I love picture books. And for me, stories or story time talks about human connection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we're little, we had grandma telling us stories, everybody listening. And now when people are talking, we listen, we have that connection. I mean, right now we're telling each other stories and we're connecting, because I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. So stories are really powerful in connecting people, right? And we all know that. And I believe that. So I did this talk the other day, and it's about life lessons from picture books. Mm-hmm. And picture books actually are very simple stories with a clear message, playful, fun, and applies to, relevant to all of us at every point in our lives. And I think so it, as we grow, life is more complicated, and we all have our little or big battles that we're fighting every day. We all have our tough times, hard times, but the rules of life, what I say, remain simple, and we need these reminders all the time. And so as a picture book collector, I get that. I mean, I pick up a book and I read it and I'm like, oh my God, it's so heartwarming. It's so cute. It's so simple. But then I'm like, gosh, that applies to everyone. It's like, mm-hmm. I read a picture book from when I was a kid, and the same one now, you see the messaging is you take it differently, and you connect to it differently, and it stays with you. And I think that, as you know, when I run these storytelling sessions for parents and children at public libraries, I have children and grandmas and parents of all different ages, and they all take away something different from the same storybook. And they all connect differently. But I think like story time and stories create such a special memory for everyone, that the connection that you have as a mother sharing a story with your child, it develops this special bond. As a grandmother listening to it and remembering about the times when you read to your own children, that connection is different. So there's so much potential for different connections happening, and it's a very special and memorable one. And so I really, really believe that story times, there should be more story times, there should be more sessions where people can attend, that they should be reading stories at home. And storybooks are absolutely amazing and very, very relevant to everyone. So that's one part of the connection. And like I said, confidence building by reading storybooks. There's a message that you, every story, every picture book has a separate message, has a beautiful message that as an adult, I look at it, and there's so many symbolisms, I can't even begin. And I'm just like, I'm a real thing for symbolisms. And so every time I pick up a storybook, I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, this is talking about that. And I'm like, okay, now you're. So anyway, so that's my thing about storybooks. And so I believe and I love and I collect and I tell people to read storybooks and picture books all the time. So I don't, yeah, so I don't know if that answer, what was the question again? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, I think
I don't know.
you did answer the question. It is, it's there is this intrinsic connectedness to like the humanity
Yeah.
of who we are. And I love your point about symbolism as well, because I also studied literature in
Yeah.
university, and that, is such a deep level of how we can engage with each other as humans that so often, it goes unseen because it is under the surface most of the time. But to engage with that level is, it can be extremely powerful and also extremely fun.
Yes. And simple. I think, I mean, they say like now, one of like, because of technology and media and the various platforms, technological platforms that we have, the simple art of conversation, children are starting to lose that. Just the simple art of just chatting and just talking to each other. Everything is done through social media, everything is done through chat apps and things like that. But when they meet each other, there's always that awkward moment of like, okay, what do I talk about? I know her through Facebook, or I know her through this and that, right? So children, they say like the art of conversation is slowly dying almost, and especially with young children. So when I read a storybook, it's like a tool for connection, really. So there's always like children come up with, I can use that as a way to connect with not just children, but with people of all ages and all genders and all, all any strata of society. So I think that way storybooks are pretty powerful.
Absolutely, yeah. And also, as you're speaking, I was imagining, when you are the reader of the storybook, there is this engagement
Yes.
with your audience, right? You're feeling them and they are feeling you. There's this back and forth
Yes.
energy exchange. And it reminded me that recently I saw you post about doing a TED Talk.
Yes.
And I'm curious to hear about that, like about your experience with that and your engagement with the audience in that kind of speaking situation, what
Yes.
that was like for you.
Yes. So it was personal, a very huge personal milestone for me. I'm a big fan of TED Talks and, TEDx Talks, and I was given the opportunity by the school, my daughter's school, and I jumped on it. And it's exactly what I talk about the power of picture books, and how, like I said, the life is complicated, and but the rules are simple, and picture books remind us of those rules. And when so I the video is not out yet because they haven't uploaded it yet, but we've done the actual live session, and it was a big thing for me because it took me months to, all these, the biggest thing I struggle with is filtering and being able to deliver your message in a simple TEDx format, which is, which has to be very concise, right? A TEDx talk cannot last, is the longest they say, it should not be more than 18 minutes, preferably between 10 to 12. And to put all of that into such a short time is in the most effective way, it was a struggle. But it took me months. I was stressing over it, and eventually I did deliver it. And it talks about what I think are the five simple rules of life that picture books will remind us of all the time, and that's relevant no matter what age you are. And those are your friendships and your community, and the importance of having a supportive community around you. And if you have a good partner, whether it is to go through life or in business or whatever, how that's essential, because that's going to lift you up or pull you down or whatever, and how you yourself has to be also a contributing important partner to the partnership, right? So how that give and take is super essential for our lives. And you build a community with those friendships, and you protect that community. So that's very important. Number two is to believe and to focus on doing things that make you happy, no matter how crazy they may sound to others. So I think we, like I said, as we grow older, we tend to lose that because we think we should be doing things because of this and that, and expectations and rules and that and da 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 da. But if you have that one thing that you truly, that makes you happy, and you keep continuing to do it and keep continuing to believe in it, then it's going to keep you happy, and that's going to lead to many more things. And the third is that everyone is unique and different. And instead of finding fault with that and thinking that you don't fit in, to work with that and to find values or mission that connect you with the others. And that just because you're different, don't think that it's bad, but that you should, but also, you know, a lot of times, like, it's your community appreciate that uniqueness of you, what you're made of. So we're all made of, I'm sure you know Elmer the patchwork elephant, and I took that as an example. And it's like his friends loved that he's different. His friends actually celebrated his patchwork. And so that's another rule. And then number four was about choosing our priorities, which we all know, and getting rid of toxic things, relationships, be it unhealthy habits that may be holding you down. So to identify that and to get rid of that. And then the number five is, as always, to when we step out of our comfort zone, which we need to remind ourselves to do as we get older, we tend to get stuck in a rut, and to do a little, if it's a little out of your comfort zone and you feel a little discomfort, not to let that not scare you, but that a little discomfort is sometimes essential for growth, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So those kind of things. So the rules of life are simple. Although and picture books, what it does is it reminds us, when you read these books, it reminds us that, you know, no matter how hard or crazy life is getting, like, the rules are always simple, and we need to remember that. So it's a good
I mean, they're really an encapsulation of so many, each picture book, when it's a good picture book,
yes,
is an encapsulation of some very interesting facet of just being a person, right?
Yes.
And share.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm a picture book nerd, and so so I like I said, I've tried, I'm like, I find symbolisms in everything.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious if, like, as you were standing there giving your talk, which clearly you have such a passion for this topic, like, if you, what tools that you use that you might teach other people to use too, in order to stay present and to be connected to your audience in that moment?
Well, I mean, if you are talking about a topic that you love, I think automatically your energy comes out, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting because a lot of friends were there to support me that day. Mm. And I kind of sent out a message to my community, to my friends, like, look, whoever can make it, please do come. And everyone, literally people I didn't expect were there from the school community. And they're like, we're here to support you. And that was so special. Oh. So getting that, just that, you know, smiling faces, knowing that your friends are there. And the biggest thing is that, you know, when you're standing up on a stage, you are scared of making a fool of yourself, of forgetting your lines, of staying present. So I actually, before I go on stage, of course, I rehearse a lot. And for TEDx, I had no idea, to be honest, like what was required. I thought I was just supposed to write a script, go up there, learn it, go up there and give it. But it was a lot more intense. So there was a lot of rehearsals at home. There was a lot of drafting. There's all that. So you practice all that. But then on the last day, before the actual, on the actual day, I don't like to practice as much. I like to take my time. I actually like spend my time just letting it sink in. And I meditate. I meditate a lot. And I do breath exercises, breathing, counting my breath. And just because I know that I have memorized it, I know that I know my lines, but, you know, I'm just this nervous energy. So I need that to settle. So I do a lot of, I do daily meditation anyway. I have journaling, so I do that. And I just take my time, breathe in, breathe out. Make sure my friends are there, my family is there to support me, and then follow the rules of standing up on stage, wearing the right comfortable, whether it's wearing your comfortable clothes that make you feel good, to wearing the right pair of shoes, you know, things like that. So I think that's very important for me, at least. I have to wear the right pair of shoes that make me feel good and are comfortable, because it's a lot of standing, wearing the right clothes that make you feel good, that gives you confidence, is very important, aside from breathing exercises, those kind of little things, and making sure you have a calm morning routine before you head out. Are sort of the little things that I like to practice before I get on stage. Yeah.
So, Tini, how do you feel like movement and being centered in the body, like how does that impact creativity, do you think?
A good walk when I'm stuck thinking about, you know, I'm like, oh my God, I'm stuck. I don't know. And a good walk is very important. So I think movement of the body, like you said, when you're standing up there and you are standing in one position and talking, you tend to get more nervous. So movement on stage is also very important to keep the flow going. And so similarly, at home when I am kind of stuck on a project and I'm like, it's just the same thing going on and around in my head. And I'm like, okay, I need to find a creative solution or a solution to this problem. I go for walks. So that's very important. And to keep the body moving, I think is very, very essential, because your creative energy and your physical energy, I think, are very connected. So you have to get your body moving to get your energy moving, which relates to your creative energy as well. Mm. So for me, that is very important. So whether, I don't know, I mean, it's different for everybody. So I like to go on long walks by the river. These days I'm lucky. So go on a walk and just clear my thoughts. And do a little bit of stretching, and you know, I love to walk in the grass without my shoes on. So feel the earth.
Yeah, that grounding. Hey,
I love that, and that helps me to clear my thoughts and get my creative process going as well. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. And would you say, is there anything else that when you're feeling like kind of creatively blocked, like that works well for, is movement like the main thing that you use for that?
Getting started. I'm also, I believe that like creativity begets creativity. Mm-hmm. So, I am a very in the process kind of person. I just need to get started. And sometimes like I overthink a lot, right? We tend to overthink. And I'm like, okay, so, but this is not right. This is not right. But over the years, one thing I've learned is that nothing is perfect when it starts, and you just have to start. So I'm very impatient also in a way, I guess. So I have to, when I think of a project, I just get started, even though I haven't thought of all the little tiny details. And I start and I think as I go. And sometimes it turns out differently, but so far it's always worked out. That's a good thing. Been lucky enough, it's worked out. And sometimes I don't, you know, I don't have it all figured out just yet, but I just need to get started, and it'll come along as I'm going. So that's that. I think a lot of times I tell my children the same thing. I'm like, yeah, okay, we don't have it figured out. We're getting there. I'm like, we're getting there. Let's go. We'll get there. So yeah,
and action really does beget action and movement, more movement, you know. Yeah. When there's already momentum,
yes,
something, then more will come.
Yes. I think it's it's not perfect,
right?
But it doesn't need to be.
Yeah,
you just get started and you keep going, and sometimes it takes on a different result than you might expect. Mm-hmm. You know, a different product altogether. And but I just go with it. And
yeah, that's cool too.
Yeah.
So I think but you know, like a lot of like my staff, sometimes they're like, but what about this, what about that? And I'm like, oh, we'll get there, we're not there yet, let's just get started. And so that's I just like to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because until you start, also, like, I feel like you cannot always be prepared for everything.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And you can trust yourself that whatever comes up, you'll figure out.
Yeah. You will figure it out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I very much work like that. We'll figure it out. I mean, it's not for everyone. You know, I really admire people who are so, they have a 5-year plan, and you know, because now I am, like it or not, a business owner, and in terms of business, I wish, I'm trying to be a bit more structured, and now I'm trying to be, but that's literally how I started my business. I'm like, we'll figure it out. Like, let's just go.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So I always have this thing that, what's the best that can happen, and what's the worst that can happen. So these two things help me make my decisions all the time. And I'm like, okay, if the best that can happen is good, and if the worst that can happen is something I can live with, and that's not going to put my family or friends in danger, and we're not going to be on the street tomorrow, let's go with it.
Yeah.
And actually, literally, like, that's always how I kind of,
live. Yeah, that's a really good way to keep perspective on what you're doing, hey? Yeah. Because it can be easy to spiral out of things and, you lose your nerve and don't do it. But
yeah,
thinking that way can,
So
Yeah,
that,
keep you on track.
yeah, that, yeah. So I'm like, okay, it's not for everyone, but like, yeah, a friend asked me once, was like, how, what were you thinking when you started your business? I was like, honestly, I was just like, what's the worst that can happen? What's the best that can happen? And, you know, it's the worst. I'm like, okay, am I gonna use up all my life savings? No. Am I gonna still have a roof over my head tomorrow if this business should fail? Yes, I will. Am I gonna lose my family and friends? No, I'm not. You know, if this business fails. So that really helped me kind of jump on projects, and I still live like that.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Like all those things that you just mentioned are very like practical things, but
Yes.
like on an emotional level, like you did you have any like worries though? Because you know, working with other people and working within the creative field, there is that element of unpredictability, isn't there? Emotionally,
Yeah.
motivation and what have you.
Yeah.
How did you manage that part of it?
Well, the first year of starting my business and working with people, literally, I think I got my hair turned gray, and I was constantly, like, literally in tears, crying. I like all the time, like, what have I done? And, like, you know, why am I doing this? There's too much stress. And I had a, like, my first show presentation, parent presentation, the first one that was, you know, family and friends and some ex-students. And it was in a small church hall, and I had no budget. I was pulling through, everything, calling in favors. And then the photographer who was supposed to cover my thing kind of bailed on me. And then it was just, everything was just like, oh my God, like, I'm gonna cry. And I did cry, and it was really hard. And then, but you learn so much after. And now when I look at that, I'm like, oh, okay, you know, like, emotionally, like, if I had to cancel a class because I wasn't well, or there was a typhoon, or there was a snow day, having to call parents, I was like, oh my God, I can't cancel the class, I can't get sick, I can't do this. And then it was always, you know, my husband would always be like calming me down and saying, it's okay, it's just one class. What's the worst that can happen? You're gonna need to refund the money. And he would put that back on me. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna have to refund the money. I'm gonna have to call everyone. And he's like, yeah, so these are all doable things, right? Like, yeah. So emotionally, it was, the first year was a huge roller coaster, I'm not gonna lie. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, okay, why did I start this again? Kind of thing. Like, can't I just wanna do something like clock in, clock out, and be done. Because when you run a business, as we all know, you don't sleep. You think about it all the time. You can't clock in or you can't clock out. But over the years, I've learned too. But the first few years are hard. So emotionally, like, it is hard, but you grow with it and you learn with it. And now I look back on those days and I'm like, oh, okay. Been there, done, you know?
You grew so much during
I
that
grew
time, hey?
so much, yeah, and yeah, and I'm still learning. I'm every project I do, there's some other thing, but you know, I've also learned to, like, with this meditation and all this. This was not a practice I did before. I never thought I could meditate, but then that I've had to learn this in order to deal with the everyday stress and how to keep calm, because I'm a generally restless person. With 101 projects, so these kind of like coping mechanisms I've had to, some came on its own and some I've had to work on and still working on.
So thinking about all those projects, can you tell us what's the project you're currently working on that's exciting you?
Exciting and new. So I actually, in the process of rebranding my company. I'm hoping to do so. The first 10 years of building this company was just sort of, like I said, learning as I go. Didn't have a business plan, nothing. I'm just like, yeah, okay. I got one class, new class. I have a second new class. Okay, let's go. But I'm actually taking this time now to sort of see where I want it to go and how to make it more sustainable. And that's a big project in itself, because so far it's always been Miss Tenny's class. And I want it to be a lot more than that. The program is amazing. And I've seen children benefit from this program, and I want it to be accessible to a lot more children who are not in international schools, who just, you know, for Japanese children to understand what it is. So I have been very lucky to have a collaboration with Born in Lund, which is a completely Japanese company. They have Japanese clientele, and they're just starting to offer the program and understanding what it is. So I'm hoping to be able to offer this and collaborate with companies that have the same mission of enriching children's lives by helping them develop confidence. So those are some ongoing projects. And then I am now working on offering, have you heard of, I'm sure you do, you're from the UK, so Lambda, the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so the Lambda exams, like those ones, I'm hoping to launch that come September.
Oh, wow, that'd be exciting.
Yeah. And I'm really, really looking to train teachers.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah. So that these are the projects that I want to move on to, so that the company grows and the program is more accessible to everyone. And these are the projects I am currently on.
Yeah, right, they're now. Big projects. They're big projects.
Oh, they're exciting. They're so exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for spending time with us today, Tenny.
It's
been so great to have a conversation with you. And so if people want to find you online, where can they look?
You can find me at the, I have a new website. It's called learningcircle.jp.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah, or yes. And then I have an Instagram, Learning Circle. And I'm hoping to, I have a YouTube called Adventures of Miss Tenny, which I'm hoping to, it's just random videos right now, but hoping to streamline that. That's another project. So like I said, like, you know, a lot of projects that need to all come together into one, because I've just been doing a lot of things. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. I love the work you're doing. And
thank you.
Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much, Tenny.
No, thank you both. Because, you know, I think we're all the same. There are so many of us out here who are entrepreneurs, moms, foreigner moms, what they call, right?
Yeah.
So all working towards, with children and with, you know, amazing missions. And Paige, I love your creativity cafe, and I never attended one. I'm hoping to, but I'm like, yeah. So
you're welcome. Thank you.
It's so nice that we're all coming together, and you know, there's this beautiful community of supportive people.
Yes, yeah, it makes such a difference to be connected, you know, to have that mutual support and mutual appreciation, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes. It really does. Yeah.
Yes. So thank you for having me.
Thank you, Tenny.
It's been lovely.
Thank you for listening to me ramble on.
Thanks, Tenny.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now it's time for our Ask Us Anything section. So this is when we read and answer questions from our listeners about the creative process. So Paige, what's today's question?
All right. This is a great question. It is submitted anonymously, which we also invite. You are welcome to submit anonymously anytime you'd like. Hey, Paige and Jordana, how are you guys? Thanks for sharing so many creative people with us. I love listening and get so inspired by the podcast. As for me, I've been writing a novel for the past few years, and sometimes it goes gangbusters and it feels awesome. But other times, probably most of the time, I hit a wall and just feel completely stuck. It's almost like I'm encased in concrete or something, and I just can't make myself do it. How can I find the discipline to keep writing even when I'm stuck like this? It's a great question.
Oh, that sounds right up your street, Paige. I'm sure you have some suggestions for this listener.
I do. Well, and I just want to say first how just evocative and accurate the image of being encased in concrete can feel.
Oh, really?
When we're stuck like this, no matter what it is, whether it's writing or anything else, right? Like when you're just like, how do I do it though? But how do I do it? It can just feel like so stuck. Have you ever felt like that?
It's interesting. So as you're talking about that, I'm trying to like think about writing versus like painting. Like for me, if I'm stuck, I'll just do a different project, or I'll try and use a different medium, or I feel like there's more versatility. But with writing, there's only one way to do it, isn't there? Like it's words on a paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's purely from my point of view as a non-writer. So I feel like maybe sometimes it feels more difficult for writers because, you know, there is only one way to write, isn't there, really?
There's a different,
practically speaking, practically.
Right? Yeah, there's a different like moving forward than there is with like putting paint on a canvas, for sure, I think. And also, like, I think there's something in what you said that can be really valuable, which is, you know, you can try to do something different, you know, whether it's through the medium of words or a different one. Like if, say, for example, you're a writer, but you also love baking, you know, sometimes just engaging in something totally different that you love and you don't feel any pressure around can help loosen up the creative feelings going forward, you know, like, or it could even be, let's say, you know, you want to write the novel, but there's something else that is just feels a little more compelling to you as a writing project. Like, what if you lean into that? You know, what if you write a poem, or what if you, whatever it is, like that feels, I don't know, write some fan fiction, write some like a blog post, you know, a Facebook post, or anything, you know, that actually feels lighter and less pressure, like there's less pressure around it.
Yeah.
That can also really.
Yeah. So like, I have a question with the practically how they would do that. So for example, if the listener was, she sat down to start writing for her novel but couldn't, so instead of starting that, she would try something else, or like, is this something you just interweave into your life, or is it something you do instead of, or something you do beforehand?
Mm-hmm.
Like practically speaking, how would this person connect those two things together?
What I would encourage anyone to do in this kind of situation is to feel into what feels best.
Okay.
Whatever feels intuitively best, try that. You know, when we follow that thread of our own pleasure and our own enjoyment, that is when creativity starts to flow more fully. And in doing that, we also loosen up our own body, you know, the bodily experience, the tightness we have mentally around it. All of that starts to become, you know, less rigid and more fluid. And that's what we're looking for, you know, in a process. And then there's another thing in here that I'd really like to kind of look at, which is this idea of like making ourselves do it, you know, or finding the discipline.
Interesting words to choose.
Yeah. I think when we are approaching any project from this kind of standpoint, what can happen, this is not to say it always happens because everyone is different, but if we're finding that this is not working for us, that's probably because in general, this tactic does not work for us. You know, push harder or force more or create more discipline is probably not the way if it's not already working for you. You know, what if the way was something else? You know, what if the way was towards the enjoyment and the pleasure and the fun? Like, I would encourage anyone who's feeling this kind of way to ask yourself, why do I even want to do this project? You know, what made me start this project? What lit me up about it? What got me excited about it? Why do I want it? You know, because you don't have to do it.
You know? Yeah.
You're choosing to do it.
Yeah.
And so when we reconnect with that part of the creative process that's more embedded in enjoyment and fun and playfulness and ease and like excitement, that can start to dissolve the feelings of stuckness and move us into something that feels much more alive, you know, and human and enjoyable.
Yeah, because I think for any creative project, sometimes we get overwhelmed with the end result or getting enough done each day, or and we forget like the original reason. I think going back, I know for me, going back to why I wanted to do this project always helps me to kind of calm down a bit.
Yeah,
totally. Because I don't get so like that concrete feeling, but I get that like panicky, like flustered feeling. So yeah, going back to that really helps to calm me down. So I wonder if for the listener as well, just like you said, remembering why did you want to write this book? What is it you wanted to tell people, you know, that might help to release that tension somewhat.
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, I think there's also a place for interacting with it in a different way. You know, like what if, I don't know, let's say one of the characters is a woodworker or is like a ceramicist, or, you know, like, could you go see something that this person, this character would want to see? Could you?
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so to experience through the eyes of a character, if you're doing like something like novel writing, could also maybe help you connect with the work in a way that feels like reinvigorated and exciting.
Yeah, that's definitely bringing joy into the process, isn't it?
Yeah, like fun. Mm. Where is the fun?
Yes.
It's the question I always want to ask. I am a fun, you know, loving person. I enjoy anywhere I can find fun. I'm all about it. And I think in the creative process, when we ask ourselves this again, where's the fun in this for me now? Or where could it be? Because sometimes we don't feel any at all. Where could it be? Yeah. So thanks so much for this question. We love getting questions from you, and we would love to have more. So please feel free to send us any questions you have on our Instagram account is one way. We are at the Creativity Cafe 21 on Instagram. You are welcome to send us a private message there, and we will happily receive your questions that way. And what are the other options, Jordana?
You can also send us an email. So in the show notes, you will find our email address. So please send your messages there as well if you want to.
Yes. And thank you for listening, everyone. We'll catch you next time. If you like the Creativity Cafe podcast, please subscribe and share it with other people who you think might like it too. Subscribing means that you never miss an episode, which means that we get to share all of these delightful conversations with you, knowing you'll get to hear every single one. You can subscribe by going to the show page on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and then just tapping on the plus sign or clicking on follow. It really helps the pod for you to do that. While you're there, if you'd be willing to leave us a rating and a review, we would love to have that too. We love to read what you think and hear your opinions, your thoughts, your feelings about the Creativity Cafe podcast. So please do go and leave us a rating and a review. Thanks, everyone.